This is the host, Alex Addicks. Before we get to the show, I have a bit of bad news. The show has been offline for nearly a month because we had a death in the family. My brother-in-law, David Baker, passed unexpectedly. He was the elder brother of my wife, only in his mid-40s, and had three children, one of whom was in the middle of Army National Guard boot camp. His father, also named David Baker, a Vietnam veteran and former LA County Deputy Sheriff, has been a guest on the show several times. Dave was loved, and he will be missed. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Addicks, and this is episode 260, 299 Days. We have a great interview for you this week. Glenn Tate is our guest, and we discuss his book series, 299 Days. You know, of all of our guests over the years, Glenn is the first novelist. I thought the topic would be interesting and a nice break from the norm. Also, before we jump into the interview, I want to let everyone know about a seminar that I have at the end of the month. On Saturday, July 27, I'm holding a women's defense seminar at 2 p.m. at our martial arts studio here in Woodland Hills. This is a women's only class, so sorry, no husbands, fathers, or brothers, not even in the audience. We do this to make the women feel comfortable. You know, men can drop off and pick up, but when the course is actually in progress, the men need to take lunch, take in a movie, or generally just be elsewhere. The class is 2 hours long and only $40 if you pre-register. The cost is $50 if you pay at the door. I'll include details and a link in the show notes. Okie dokie. And now we're on to our interview with novelist Glenn Tate, author of the 299 Day series.
The legal aftermath of using a gun in self-defense can be traumatic and expensive. Get help and peace of mind through the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Network members receive much-needed financial and legal support right after a self-defense incident. They also receive education in the form of DVDs from some of the top names in the business, along with having access to a nationwide pool of attorneys. Learn about membership at www.armedcitizensnetwork.org.
Welcome back. And this week we have a special guest for the show. We have a novelist, which is the first time we've ever had a novelist on the show. We have Glenn Tate, and he is the author of the 299 Day series. So welcome, Glenn.
Well, thank you for having me, Alex. Appreciate it.
So let's talk about this series. Now, it's not just a single book, but you actually have an entire series of books on prepping, but it's a novel. It's not like a how-to.
Yes, that's right. It's a story, and there's some how-to information cleverly woven in there, but it's more a story about people, and then when you finish it, you realize you learned a lot of things, and you hopefully enjoyed a story. It's a 10-book series about prepping and then a collapse and what happens after the collapse. And it's basically about me. Book one is me. I'm the main character, Grant Mattson, about a guy who realizes things are maybe going crazy and he needs to prep. The process of him prepping and some resistance he receives from his wife and from sort of society at large, and then the collapse, how it happens. I have a job in the governmental sector, and I have what I call a front row seat to corruption. I live and work in the state capital of Washington State, and I see things, and my friends deal with things that I think provide a unique perspective. So I've got, I think, a pretty good vision and perspective on how a collapse might occur. And by the way, there's no conspiracies. There's nothing weird. It's everything predictable that your listeners probably already know about. Government spending too much money and all of that sort of thing. So there's a collapse. The main character and his family go out to their cabin out in a rural place. A community forms up, and that's very critical. No one can do this on their own. This isn't living in a bunker and all of that sort of thing. It's about a community and the different skills people have and the stories going on and the human side of all of it. There are some visitors that arrive, and a military little unit forms up, and then there's a group of good guys statewide that go and do some good things, and then there's a little bit of rebuilding. So that, in a nutshell, is a 10-book, 3,200-page series.
Wow. Okay. Now, Glenn Tate is not your real name. You're using a pen name because of your position in government.
That's right, and that's pretty critical. So far, the identity hasn't leaked out, and I hope that stays that way. I might have to make a choice here pretty soon between my job and being this author, but guess what? That ship has sailed because the book's out there, and so I don't know that I can go back. See, when I wrote this, I basically wrote this for myself. I never thought it would be published. I never thought it would be as widely read as it has become. And so I put a lot of details in the story, especially in book one, which is about me, that I never thought anyone would read. And so I never thought it would be a problem. And now, with so many people reading it and so much of my real life laid out in book one, people who know me should be able to figure it out. So we'll see if that happens. But so far, so good.
Nice. Now, you took an interesting tact that a lot of novelists don't, is you wrote the entire series, all 10 books, and then worked out to publish it. It's not like you wrote one or two and then got a contract and continued to take it out. You actually had the whole series planned and written and then are trying to publish it. And they're not publishing all at the same time. You still have a couple of books coming out later this year.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's funny because while I think the books are good, and I'm not just saying that to compliment myself. I mean, I read this thing and I thought that it was a great story, but of course I thought that. It was about me and it was written by me, so of course I would think that it sounded good and that the content was interesting because, of course, everyone thinks they're interesting. So I thought, this is pretty good, but gee, would anybody else be interested in it? And so I didn't really even try to get it published a few books at a time because I didn't think anybody would want to really publish it. I was going to self-publish it, and then I sent it to the first publisher and first and only publisher I sent it to, which is Prepper Press. As you can tell from the name, they're a specialty publisher. And they looked at it and said, we'd like to publish all 10 books. And I said, really? That'd be great. It was a surprise. So that's how it went. I guess now in hindsight, and now that I've found out more about how books are done, I guess it's very uncommon to write 10 books and then submit them to a publisher, but it worked out well. So I'm happy about that.
Well, definitely congratulations are in order. You know, writing a single book is a tremendous effort, and then being able to write 10 books in a series is really a huge accomplishment. Whether or not it's published or not, it's still an accomplishment.
It's even more unusual given how it evolved, and that's the Easter Bunny. And that sounds odd, but the Easter Bunny is why this 10-book series was written. I was prepping in secret. By the way, I wrote this entire 3,200-page book in secret. My wife had no idea. I had to tell her because some 1099s came in the mail, and it's kind of hard to hide that. So anyway, I wrote it in secret, but I was prepping in secret. And I needed to have an explanation for her because she was very resistant to this. She's grown up a very normal, pleasant American life, and things about collapses and why do you need water and why do you need food and why do you need guns is all a foreign concept to her. And so she was very resistant. Well, I needed to come up with a reason if there was a collapse of some kind, and all of a sudden a bunch of things started showing up in our garage, some food, some water, some medical supplies, some firearms. I was keeping them all at an offsite rental storage unit. And so I needed to come up with a reason. So I came up with the Easter Bunny. And the reason I did that was there were two paths I could go down. The first approach with my wife would be to say, I was right, you were wrong. You better listen to me because I'm way smarter than you are and I can see into the future and you can't. So here's how it's going to be. First of all, it's a bad approach in general. And second of all, with my wife in particular, it's an exceedingly bad approach. So I thought that's not good. And so
I think we could probably all identify.
Exactly. So the other approach was a face-saving approach. And I realized if I said, honey, I love you and the kids very, very much. Look what the Easter Bunny brought. So let's put it to good use and let's start taking care of the kids and let's start doing all the work we need to do and let's take care of ourselves. I thought that would be a great approach. So this Easter Bunny speech, that would be the speech I gave when I had to explain why all this stuff was in the garage. The Easter Bunny speech would become probably the most important thing I would ever say, because if my wife said, you're crazy. What is all the, I mean, if she couldn't handle the totality of the situation, she might say, this, I can't handle this. You know, you just need to leave. I mean, take your stuff and, you know, you're weird. Just go away. So I had to get this right. This would be if there were a collapse going on, and I believe there will be for reasons I can describe later, but if this event was going on, this would be the most stressful, important time of our lives. So I needed to get this right. So I got a post-it note out and I started writing out little bullet points about why I prepped, what I did to prep, and what we need to do going forward. Well, this post-it note turned into a page. Again, this is an important discussion I need to give, so I need to have it right. And it went from one page to two pages. Then I looked at this outline and I said, my goodness, this is a really good explanation of why people need to prep, what they need to do to prep, and all of that. So then I thought, well, I'll write up the Easter Bunny speech as a little short story. I'll put it up on a forum I'm on, and maybe some people will enjoy it. Maybe it'll help some people. Maybe they can take the Easter Bunny speech, and if they've got a reluctant spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend or some other loved one, they can use this Easter Bunny speech to persuade people. And that would be kind of a neat thing to do. I can help some people. That'd be nice. So as I started writing the short story, I realized, well, I need to describe to people why I'm doing what I'm doing in the sense of my personality and my life experiences and how that affected it. And as I started writing that, I then had to explain my wife's personality and her experiences and then all these other things. And it kept going and going and going until it was 10 books long. It took about 2.5 years to write. Again, doing it secretly, I would wake up at 3:30 or 4 in the morning. It was weird. I would wake up wide awake and I would have a chapter outlined in my head and I would sit down at the computer and I would type for several hours and I didn't even realize what was going on until 2 or 3 hours into it. My butt would start hurting a little bit because I'd been sitting in a chair. My tummy would, you know, grumble because I was hungry. And then I realized it was 6 or 6:30. And so I was in a trance really as I wrote this and I just couldn't stop. There were all these characters out there and all these events and all these ideas I had, and I just started blending them and weaving them together into this thing, and it was done. And as I say, first publisher I sent it to offered me a 10 book deal, and it's unusual. I'm a very humble guy. I don't think that this is sort of predictable or what ought to happen because I'm so awesome that this is how the world ought to treat me because I'm awesome. None of that. It's been a magnificent, unexpected blessing, and I'm very, very happy about it.
Well, it sounds like the Easter Bunny then kind of morphed into the Energizer Bunny.
I'm going to use that line. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Steal that.
It's all yours. So, yeah, it sounds like you're very passionate about this. And, I mean, as we spoke offline, the prepper stuff is a really, really super hot topic right now. They even have the Doomsday Preppers on, I think it was National Geographic, that was a popular show. And I think you hit a really hot topic, and valid and important.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm passionate about this because I see things going on, and these are headline things. And when I talk about my job and everything, I don't mean to imply to anybody that there's a secret memo that details all these things that are going to happen and I somehow have access to it and I'm really important and everybody needs to listen to me because of this super secret memo. Of course, that I could never show you and I can never actually prove that I have inside information, right? None of that. I think you can just look at the headlines. Economic things, that's my primary concern. There's mathematically no way for the United States or many state and local governments to possibly pay the debts that have been accumulated. Baby boomers are retiring. Entitlement spending is by necessity going through the roof. And when I say by necessity, I mean demographically. I don't mean that people need to be on various programs. I'm saying that they've been promised and they've relied upon these various programs. The bills are coming due. When I have discussions with state officials and they say things like, this is completely unsustainable, and they're preppers themselves, my goodness, that really, really had an effect on me when a relatively high-ranking state official that I know well showed me all his stuff. And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, this guy knows, things that are going on. And that had an effect. The political system is broken, and I won't go into it. Everybody knows that. I don't even need to mention why. It's all broken and dysfunctional. And there's so many people out there, millions and millions of people that are dependent on the government, and not just welfare. I mean, there are government contractors who are dependent on the government. There's a wide variety of people. Society is pretty much dependent on government spending the amount of money that it currently spends. It cannot continue to spend that amount of money. There will be ramifications to that. I think people will demand that their EBT cards have money put back on them and things like that. And I think it'll unfold over a matter of a few days or a few weeks. I don't think we'll suddenly snap our fingers and the world will be cast back into the Stone Ages. I think we'll watch it unfold in a relatively short amount of time, but there will be time to take some preparations and some precautions. Of course, you can do that now before these things start unfolding. There are some, I don't even want to call them predictions, but there are some depictions and things in the book that have already unfolded, and they're not very specific ones. I don't mean to imply that I predict the day and the time things happen, because anyone that claims that is a fraud.
But you're not Nostradamus?
No, I'm not. Kind of wish I were, but it hasn't. The general tone and the general flavor of things is what I predict. There's a line in the book. Some of the characters, the good guys, start spray painting a graffiti tag, and it's "I miss America." And that whole idea of missing America and things have really changed for the worse, that's the flavor and tone of things I'm talking about. So yeah, I'm very passionate about it because I think bad things are going to happen. I'm also passionate about it because people can do some very simple things now to make their lives, number one, possible in the future, as in being able to live and making their lives much better. I won't go into the details of that. People probably have an idea about that, but getting prepared and taking care of things now can really go a long way with what's coming. And I keep talking about what's coming. I don't mean to paint a dark apocalyptic vision, because as far as I can tell, my book is different than every other book out there about collapses, because all the other books talk about a total and complete collapse, cannibalism and anarchy and Mad Max apocalyptic stuff. And that could happen, I guess. I don't think it will, because, and this is just based on life experience, and that is that the more dramatic something seems, the less likely it is to occur. And so, obviously, complete and total breakdown is very dramatic. So that, in my mind, means it's less likely than a partial collapse, which is what my book's about. There's some government functioning in some places. Other places, not really. In most places, there's a little bit of government. The utilities stay on in my scenario for an interesting reason that you have to read about. Sorry, it would take too long to explain. But the utilities, I think, pretty much stay on. There's some outages, and the internet comes on and off and all of that. But basically, there's running water and electricity. And as you know, most prepper novels have a premise like an EMP strikes and there's no electrical capacity of any kind, and they're, everything's back to the Stone Ages. I think it's really interesting to look at how people would react when there's only a partial collapse. And I didn't invent this because I'm brilliant. I looked at what actually has happened elsewhere in Russia in the early 90s, in Bosnia to an extent in the 90s, Argentina with their economic collapse in the early 2000s. I looked at what happens in those situations, and I projected it into an American scene and American landscape, and came up with something that I think is very realistic. That's the comment I get from so many people, that the book seems so real. And it is, because the parts that have already happened, like my life and my perception into the political world, is real. As I mentioned, put far too much detail in there in hindsight. So that part is real. And then when I project out into the future, it seems very plausible because it's based on human experience all over the world at different times. And so that's my guiding light and not my own imagination. I'm not creative enough to predict how the world will function, but I can look at how it's functioned elsewhere and then turn that into the American version of a Russian collapse or a Bosnian collapse or an Argentinian collapse.
That's a really interesting approach. It can be very compelling as well. I'm a light prepper. I prep primarily for natural disasters. but not a collapse of the government. I'm of the belief that things are going to change. I don't know if they're as drastic as a lot of people suggest, and a lot of the, you know, the people that get the headlines are the extremists. And I kind of like your approach because it seems more reasonable.
One of the things to amplify that is that I have two rules about my prepping, and this is displayed throughout the book as far as being reasonable, because it's very easy to lose your head and become emotional and cash out your 401k and buy 30 years worth of freeze-dried food. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you see on doomsday preppers. And that is obviously an overreaction. My two rules are don't go into debt and don't break the law. And those are two pretty simple rules that are actually pretty easy to live by. If you're not going into debt, you're doing things as you can afford it. You're doing little things. You're starting off small, and that's all fine and good. You don't have to spend a lot of money on this. And of course, the not breaking the law part goes without saying. That's primarily oriented towards weapons. Don't start breaking laws. Because you know what's a terrible survival plan? Being in federal prison. That's a terrible, terrible way to survive a collapse.
I don't know. I mean, they've got nice, solid, strong walls, three meals a day, a place to sleep, armed guards to protect you.
So, yeah, that's the reasonable approach. And that is another thing that I think is different about this book, is that since it's really about me, and I think of myself as a reasonable, rational person, I don't know, I'll let other people decide if that's true, but it's written from that regular guy, rational guy perspective, and there's no hysteria. And that's another thing people can relate to, because as I'm describing how I slowly bought some food and stored it away and started shooting again. I grew up in the country and lost all my country boy skills and kind of reacquainted myself with them. And so I started shooting again. People can relate to this slow buildup of the prepping skills, because they're probably going through it, or they're thinking about doing it, or something like that. So that's an important thing. And the regular guy part of this is important, because a lot of books have some storyline like a bunch of retired SEALs show up and say, hey, do you want to be in our, you know, door kicking SWAT team? And I don't know any SEALs, retired or active duty. I just don't know any. Most people don't. And this is a story about me, the most regular mundane guy you're ever going to meet, and my regular guy friends, guy and gal friends, obviously, and regular people doing regular things, but doing them well in some cases. And here's another reality check. My character and all the other characters sometimes do stupid things, and they're sometimes weak, and they're sometimes too emotional. They're sometimes just plain stubborn and stupid, because that's how I am. I'm a mix of good and bad like other people. And so the people are real. That's the comment again, is this seems so real. Well, yeah, these are all real people, and they have real flaws, real strengths in some cases, but real flaws in other cases. So it's not the comic book sort of thing that I don't really like the comic book approach. It just isn't believable to me. And so there's none of that. And that's why I think this series has really, really taken off.
So you wrote this series, and the series is called 299 Days. What is the best way to find the books? How do they search under Glenn Tate? Where is it available? Where can you purchase it?
On Amazon. It's also available as a Nook download. Amazon, you know, the Kindle reader, their apps. You can read it on your iPad, Kindle for iPad, and that sort of thing. Hard copy is available at Amazon, and bulk orders are available from the publisher. The best way to find out about the book and then find out where to purchase it would be my website, which is 299days.com, 299days.com. And all the links are there. And there's an interesting blog, and there's some interesting photographs and all kinds of other neat things that tell you a little bit more about the backstory of how the thing came about.
So the series is called 299 Days, but what are some of the titles of the books?
Yeah, book one is The Preparation, 299 Days, The Preparation. Book two is 299 Days, The Collapse. Book three is 299 Days, The Community. Book four is The Stronghold. Book five is The Visitors. And book six, which was released a few days ago, is The 17th Irregulars, which is the guerrilla unit that forms up. So there you go. Those are the names of the books, and links and pictures of the covers are all available on the website.
Nice. Now, even though all the books were written already, why did you elect to release them individually rather than as a set?
That is a great question. I don't really remember a specific reason. It was a series of conversations with the publisher. I do realize what the reason was. The books needed to be edited. I had just written them and they were raw, and the publisher needed to edit these. The publisher and editors needed to edit these in reasonable, manageable chunks. And so we started putting out two books at a time. And then as more and more people are reading these, we are, both the publisher and I, are even more conscious of how many eyes are on them, and we want everything to be perfect, right? There's a bigger audience now. And so we're spending more time editing them. And so it takes a long time to edit one of these. I do an edit. The editor does an edit. I accept some of the changes and all of that. We have volunteer proofreaders throughout the country who are helping with this and that sort of thing. So that's the time that it takes in between. The option was available early on to just sit down and entirely, thoroughly edit all 10 books. And my thought was, I don't mean to be dark and foreboding, but the collapse might happen before we get done editing all 10 books. So we wanted to put them out as quickly as we could, but still have the quality.
Now, also, when we spoke offline, you mentioned that you had a self-defense incident recently.
Yeah, I mean, of all podcasts to talk about this on, it would be yours. This is a lot of what you do. And it happened last week. I had to pull a gun on a guy, and not really directly, but you'll see what I mean. I was driving to work, and I went down a street, and the street is an overpass over Interstate 5. Of course, Interstate 5, gigantic interstate going through the country. And there was I could see up ahead because I try to pay attention to things. By the way, I wasn't carrying concealed. With my job, I cannot carry concealed, and I was going to work. And when I say I'm alert, I don't mean to say that I'm super alert and I'm some superhero guy, but I'm reasonably alert. And I see on the overpass a teenage kid, with some branches and kind of pieces of wood. They weren't really logs. They were pieces of wood. And there's a car stopped there, and there's an adult who's on his phone who's kind of grabbing onto the kid, sort of restraining him. But the kid isn't really fighting back or anything like that. So I instantly thought that this teenage kid was throwing pieces of wood over the overpass onto cars on I-5, which is, as you can imagine, a very dangerous situation. The kid was unarmed. He had a shirt and shorts on, so it's not like he had some clothing where he could be hiding something. And it was interesting. I immediately de-escalated things in my mind. I thought, well, this guy appears not to be armed. Some other person is pretty much restraining him. And I looked around, and there were no other bad guys, because bad guys travel in packs. You always have to assume that there's more than one bad guy. It didn't seem like a very dangerous situation. So I reacted accordingly. So I stopped my truck, opened the door, and I have an LCP in my console, locked properly under Washington law. Actually, it doesn't have to be locked since I have a concealed pistol license, but I like to keep things tight. I have kids and all of that. So,
yeah. And LCP is what?
Oh, it's a 380 auto by Ruger. It's a very small handgun. Obviously, being a 380, it's not exactly a powerful weapon, but it is indeed a handgun. If it's very, very small, it fits in a shirt pocket, pants pocket. It's teeny. It's a pocket gun. A mouse gun is what some people call them. And it's what I had. I have other guns, but that's the one that I had handy. So I unlocked very quickly, because I do it a lot and practice a lot. I unlocked the case and got my 380 auto out. And then I parked the truck so that my engine block was between me and the kid. Again, he's not armed. I'm really not expecting a firefight. I mean, if I expected a firefight, I probably would have got something other than a 380 auto out. And I watched, and I had my pistol. I didn't have a holster, so it was drawn, but it was out, and it was, I was pointing it down, finger off the trigger guard, of course, I teach tactical firearms courses, and so I if I had my finger in the trigger guard, I should fail myself, right? And I had my gun pointed down sort of along my leg so that you really couldn't see anything. I didn't want to have a firearm out and visible if I didn't need it. It was at the ready, but boy, it was a low probability that I needed to present this to anybody. And also, you know, there are a lot of weird people in my town, a lot of gun phobes, and people, if they see a gun, for all I know, they're going to call the police and a SWAT team is going to think I'm the bad guy. Now, I'm dressed up in business attire. I look like a Secret Service agent, you know, when I'm dressed up. And so I don't usually get a lot of unwanted attention. But as I'm watching all that's going on, and I thought to myself, by the way, if I see this kid throw a piece of wood over I-5, this just got to be a very more serious situation, and I'm going to go catch the kid. I'm going to stop him from doing it. I mean, that's deadly force that he's using. And hopefully I don't have to point a gun at him, but doggone it, I mean, he could be armed, and if he's throwing wood over the overpass, he's essentially trying to kill people, and that needs to stop. As I'm running these things through my mind and kind of watching all of this, again, checking the kid for any kind of weapon, which he clearly doesn't have, the police show up. It was very interesting, Alex. As soon as I saw the police, I realized, okie doke, my job here is done. I don't want much of a role. I mean, I'm going to protect myself, and if something happens, protect somebody else, but I'm not a police officer, and I've got two words for everyone who thinks maybe they're going to go out and be a police officer, even if they're not, and that would be George Zimmerman. And so I'm not going to try to tackle some guy and do all that if I don't need to. So the police came, and the kid wasn't even trying to take off, which told me that he wasn't a very serious criminal. He could have done a much better job at being a criminal than he was doing. And so when the police came up to him, the kid started running down a trail. It was the weirdest thing. I don't know why, even though I just told myself my role here is done and I don't need to be very active in this situation. I see this kid run and I just start chasing him. I don't know why. I had office kind of shoes on. So
yeah, something that we always teach is that there's a chase instinct.
I could, exactly right. It was the weirdest thing. In my head, I knew I should just stay there and not brandish a weapon. And I see the kid and boom, I'm chasing after him. And he was not in very good shape. And I actually caught up to him pretty quickly. But the cop was ahead of me. The cop grabbed him. And the cop's back is turned to me. And the cop is cuffing the kid. And I realized I am now a few yards from a police officer with a pistol in my hand.
I was about to ask what happened to the pistol.
Straight into my pocket. By the way, my car keys were not in my pocket. I would never put a pistol without a holster into my pocket, especially with car keys. My car keys were in my truck because I didn't take them out. So I quickly put my pistol in my pocket before the officer turned around. By the time he turned around and saw me, I had my hands out to the side with my palms showing, which I call the international symbol of I'm not a threat. And he saw me and he nodded at me and I nodded at him. He brought the kid back and I went back out to where the police car was. It was funny what I was thinking. On the very off chance that there were a whole bunch of bad guys and this kid was trying to draw a cop down a trail. And I mean, I was laughing at myself for even thinking how unlikely all of this was, but I thought, I'm here, got a pistol. There's a cop here. Maybe, you know, I should probably just, I don't know, be looking for other bad guys. And that's what I did. And then, so when the police officer came up, I said, I didn't witness this kid doing anything other than running. And do you need me? And he said, nope. And he never saw my pistol. And I never told him I had a gun. He doesn't need any distractions. I'm a distraction at this point. I just want him to be focusing on what he needs to do. So he said I could go. So I left and I was about 5 minutes late for work. And that was pretty much the impact it had on me, was that I was about 5 minutes late for work. So there you have it. It was kind of anticlimactic. People probably thought it was going to be a firefight with a drug gang or something like that. But like I said, the more dramatic something is, the less likely it is to occur.
Absolutely. And I think you handled it properly.
Good. You know what you're talking about. So
not always.
Well, nobody got shot. Nobody got arrested except the bad guy who was doing bad stuff. Nobody was hurt. I didn't have to spend a day filling out police reports. I'm not going to get sued civilly. I mean, nothing bad happened. And I had a very, very teeny role in all of this, which is just fine with me because I'm not a police officer. It's not what I do. Police officers couldn't do what I do all day long because they're not trained and they don't have the experience. So we're even. I'm not going to be George Zimmerman.
Yeah. Yeah. And that case is going to trial.
Yes.
That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
I think he'll be acquitted.
I'm hopeful, but I'm not confident in the political pressures behind the situation.
Mm. Yep. That's what it always is.
It can go either way. Depending upon how you see and what should be done, it's still reality and politics and facts don't mix well.
That's right.
So, Glenn, thanks again for coming on, and I think it's been a very interesting discussion. I think people are going to be really interested in the books, and I hope they enjoy them. What is the best way to find out more information and possibly to contact you?
Yeah, of course, the best place is the website, 299days.com, but I'm a real active Facebook user. It's a terrific way to communicate, put information out, and have some fun. There's some funny stuff on there, too. I try to be light and not, you know, talk about the end of the world. And so the Facebook page is Glenn Tate, and that's Glenn with one N and T-A-T-E. There's several Glenn Tates, so you might need to narrow it down by my email address, and people are welcome to email me if they'd like, which is glenntate123@gmail.com. The book has its own Facebook page, and that's 299 days, parentheses, the book, 299 days, parentheses, the book. And that's a great way to interact and follow some stuff. I put up news stories, but it's not boring political stuff. I put up funny stuff because I run into funny stuff all the time. And some of the readers who interact with me on there are just really, really interesting people. And it's taken off. The Facebook page views have just absolutely gone through the roof. It's become a thing, and I think it's great, and I encourage people to connect with me and keep informed about stuff and you know, have some fun.
Cool. Well, I'll definitely check it out. I'll even buy the book and start reading it. It's going to be interesting.
Well, let me know, and I'll have the publisher send you some if you'd like.
Okay, cool. Thanks. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you for having me on the show, and thanks again.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro Second Amendment, pro gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Thanks again to Glenn for coming in on the show. He did send me a couple of his books, but I made the mistake of picking them up from the office with my father. He immediately claimed them, so I haven't even had a chance to check them out yet. I am certainly going to steal them back as soon as he's done. And that'll do it for this week. As always, you can follow my daily tips on Twitter and Facebook. On Twitter, I'm Practical Def, and Facebook is Practical Defense. If you're thinking about a career in private security here in California, we have a fully accredited and fully online program. We have the best materials and the lowest prices. Visit our website at palladiumonlinesecurity.com for all the details. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@palladium-education.com. You can also leave us a voicemail on the Practical Defense tip or comment line at 805-203-6586. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time. Stay aware, stay safe.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense podcast. For questions, tips, comments, or topic suggestions, send us an email at podcast@palladium-education.com. That's podcast@palladium-education.com. Or leave us a voicemail at 805-203-6586. I look forward to hearing from you. Practical Defense Podcast and theme music are copyright Palladium Education Incorporated.
You can now hear Gun Rights Radio Network while you're on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. On-demand news, talk, and more on your mobile phone. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed and no memory or storage wasted. Available for your iPhone, Android phones, or your BlackBerry. Downloading is easy. Go to Stitcher.com or check out your app store. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under Sources.